Hello, my magical friends. My name's Ayumi. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and you're listening to Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Whether it's your first or 111th time listening, we welcome you to our space to celebrate magical girls from every corner of the world. We have some news and things I've watched, and then we'll get to today's topic. So since our last news segment, we've had announcements for two different indie video games about magical girls, coming from Japan this time. The first one is Witch Girl Got Killed, or Maho Shoujo ga Korosareta, and this is a horror game in which you play a magical girl trainee trying to solve a mystery and avoid monsters. This will be released September 2022. It's definitely a horror game, so if you're a Resident Evil type, then this is probably for you. Next one, Affogato, is a combination magical girl battle game and coffee shop simulator. While the full game will come out in 2023, the demo for the game drops July 29th, so you can watch the PV now, and later this week you'll be able to go buy it. Links to both games on Steam are in the show notes, so if you're a gamer, give these a shot. So now let's move on to what I've been watching. Of course, we have our weekly shows. Oh my gosh, so many right now. The latest Delicious Party Precure was iconic, and I can't stop thinking about this ship that has blossomed. Also, Tokyo Mew Mew New was really interesting. I'm officially now as much in the dark as the rest of the fans, and I'm very excited for how the story continues. Smile of the Ars Notoria was very curious, and I'm still not sure exactly where the show is going, but I'm really having a good time. It's also gorgeously animated, and the girls are super cute, so yeah. Next, Rizusta is not inherently exciting exactly, but I am enjoying seeing where the story is going because it's not as obvious as one might expect. If there gets to a point where I decide, oh no, this is definitely not actually a magical girl story, then I will stop talking about it, but until then, I'm going to keep talking about it. And then, Watch a Primaji, episode 40 dropped last weekend, and I got to watch it last night because it doesn't come out in Japan on streaming until Monday evening, but oh my goodness, this show just took a radical turn and it is suddenly a completely different program after just one episode. It's really exciting. I cannot wait to see what goes on. And yeah, I just think if you aren't watching this show, you should be. And if you're watching Tokyo Mew Mew New, that means you're on High Dive, which means you can go watch that show too. And then finally, as far as seasonal shows, Ruby Ice Queendom is really interesting. I still don't know anything about like how far it has separated itself from the original Ruby, but so far, so good. It's definitely motivating me to eventually watch the original Ruby, which I probably will at some point. And then on top of everything, I also finished two series in the past week. First is The Girl in Twilight from 2018. This one is a pretty unique series about girls traveling through parallel universes and one by one becoming very unique magical girls in order to fight off creatures causing trouble in these alternate realities. It's very fun. It's a late night series, so it does have some spicy moments, but overall it isn't too bad in terms of like sexualizing high schoolers, so that's good at least. And then for something completely different, I also finished Wedding Peach from 1995. You'd think as someone who had a love angel magical persona in high school, I'd have gotten to this series sooner, but I just simply never got around to it. But in any case, I did love it. It does have issues, you know, the same as any other 90s magical girls, but I really appreciated the high camp factor and them going all in on the wedding themes. And this also has me very excited to further explore the franchise by trying out the sequel Wedding Apple, which features a lot more a variety of experiences surrounding the institution of marriage. So yeah, so that's everything I've been watching, and now we can get on to today's topic. So today we are going back to the world of Symphogear with the third season of this franchise, GX. And we also have a returning guest, Nan, who is the creator of legendary beings Ara and Celai. She's super cool and always really fun to talk to about magical girls because she is a massive magical girl nerd, just like me. And there are definitely a lot of places where she has a lot more knowledge than I do as well, which is really nice because, you know, it's always great to like fill in the gaps of your knowledge by just exploring and talking to more nerds. Yes, so Symphogear GX, this is the third season of the franchise. Really exciting. I'm actually already starting to watch the fourth season a bit, and that's also been exciting as well. It's really fun. Like, this series in general is generally a good time, you know, high action, etc., etc. It does have its problems, and for that reason, I do have to warn about, for this particular season, you know, there's a lot of stuff about dads, and there are therefore some bad fathers, so I do want to warn about that a little bit. But then there's also the usual Symphogear problem of very sexualized minors, and even more so in this particular season, which we'll get into in the main chat. And there's also self-harm and reference to suicide. So please keep that in mind before you get into today's chat. But I think that's everything else that we need to get to. So yes, please enjoy this chat with Nan about Symphogear GX. Okay, so we are here to talk about Symphogear GX, the third season of the Symphogear franchise, and I'm excited for our returning guest. Can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name's Nan. Pronouns are she, her. I'm the creator of the webcomic Legendary Beings Ara and Celai, and I'm also the founder of the Aralia Collective for Magical Girl Comics, and as the fandom likes to say for Symphogear, watch Symphogear TM.
Yes, so you are a big Symphogear fan, and I asked you about like which season you would want to talk about that was left, and you were very enthusiastic about this one. But before we get into that, what have you been enjoying in the magical girl genre since your last time on the podcast?
Oh boy, I know it's a controversial take depending on who you ask, but the last show I really enjoyed was Wonder Egg Priority. Mm-hmm. I know that it ended in a way that kind of satisfied nobody, but I guess because I am a creator and the production behind that show was, I was just like, oh God, I hope none of them die. Basically, nobody in the staff dies. And I was like, yeah, I kind of know what it's like to just like, oh, let's just get it over with because they're never going to let us finish this thing properly. But despite that, I thought it was fine. I liked it. I think there's this idea of like, you know, everything has to be perfect off the bat. It's like, well, no. I mean, that's the reason why there's not a lot of original shows that aren't based on a manga don't do well anymore. But that's a rant for another day. Basically, yeah, I really like Wonder Egg Priority. I like the story. My favorite's Momo. Hmm. Precious Momo. Must protect. I've been trying to get back to watching Creamy Mommy. Hmm. Now that it's on Retro Crush. Hmm. But I've been trying to get back to it for like 2 years now. Because I don't know why. For some reason, every time I try to watch it, it becomes like a slog for me. I don't know why, because like I like the character, I like the designs, and I like the cast too, but there's just something about the story itself that's like, oh God, this is so boring, can I go to the next episode?
Interesting.
I don't know why.
Is it like the lack of action or something like that? Because it is an idol series, it's quite different.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it has all the elements I like from other shows. Because, like, sometimes I get reminded of, like, Hime-chan's Ribbon, for example, when I'm watching it. And I really like Hime-chan's Ribbon. So I'm like, why am I not liking Creamy Mommy? But I don't know. Maybe there's something I'll figure out eventually. Let's see, what else in the genre? I don't know, because the problem is I've been kind of going back to watching, like, some of the shows that I grew up with instead of like checking out new stuff, because either the new stuff is for Precure, which is fine, but Precure has never really interested me.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the, what is it, Tropical Rouge one?
Mm-hmm.
That one interests me, but that's like on the to-watch list, like a ways down. It's either Precure or like stuff that's like, oh, this looks too edgy for me. I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. So I haven't unfortunately watched anything new aside from Wonder Egg Priority. Just been going back and watching like stuff I grew up with, like a little bit of Sailor Moon and some Cardcaptor Sakura.
Mm-hmm.
Also, does that count? Cardcaptor Sakura Clear Card? That was like, what, 2 years ago? 1 year ago? I don't even remember anymore, but
yeah,
actually I forgot I watched that recently. So that one was fine. That one, I think that ironically enough, the manga is a little better. I don't know why. The Clear Card anime was kind of like a little bit slower than I thought it would be, which makes sense. But at the same time, I was like, is it just me then? But I liked it. And I'm actually not disappointed, but like weirded out that there hasn't been like a second season immediately.
Well,
you know,
they did announce that there would be another project is coming down the pipeline, so we will see what happens there.
Yeah, hopefully it's a second season, because the original Cardcaptor Sakura I don't think needs to be remade. You know, don't touch something perfect. But yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all I've been kind of watching.
I see. Well, that's cool. So, yeah, getting into Symphogear. So, for Symphogear, what is your history with this series?
Where did I start? I don't even remember how I got into this series, which is unfortunately pretty normal for a lot of anime that I watch that I get into. But I don't remember how I got into Symphogear. I just remember watching the first season and then going, huh, that was fun. And then finding out there was a second season later, I think it was shortly after it finished Symphogear G, and then going, huh, I'll watch this. And then going, oh, I like this cast a lot more now. I think I might just keep watching it. I do remember watching GX, and obviously because I'm here, it quickly became my favorite season. I often compare it to Sailor Moon S, the third season of Sailor Moon, also ironically enough, because for me, it's kind of like the peak, in a sense. Not that Super S and Stars or AXZ and 5 were bad, but it's kind of like, you know, Sailor Moon S kind of like had dark stuff happening in terms of plot, and then GX also kind of has that similar style, and then it just kind of like goes off the rails as well, and it's like, oh, okay, this makes sense for me to compare to Sailor Moon S, at least for me. And then something happened where AXZ got released, but they didn't bring it to the States, to Crunchyroll, I believe, at the time, still had the rights to it, to license. So I kind of forgot about it, because I think I was in college, in grad school at the time, or in last year of college, and so I was just going crazy, trying to finish up studies.
Yeah, you're busy. It's normal.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell it's been a long time. I don't even remember my timeline, but I assume it has to be that, because usually that's what happens. And then finally, I think after almost 2 years, AXZ came to the United States, I think. I watched it at last. And then shortly after, I finished the fifth season. And yeah, that's pretty much it. I kind of been like a casual fan and then firmly a fan after GX. GX is the one that kind of made me go, oh, I think this is for life, me and Symphogear. AXZ as well, to be honest, because AXZ has, there's something about AXZ where the plot is kind of like meh, but the characters, the new villains, are more than enough to make up for it. And then of course there's a mobile game, which is how, at least for me, which is how I've managed to keep being a fan and kind of like enjoy a little bit more of Symphogear through the mobile game, which is XDU. So I'm such a big fan that I even made, like, I think it was 2020, a Halloween pick of all my characters from my webcomic dressed as Symphogear characters. So
yeah, I remember that. That was cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so getting into Symphogear proper. So, of course, we are talking about the third season, but for anyone who has not watched, of course, spoilers for the first two seasons coming right now. Basically, the main thing that we have to keep in mind with this story is The magical girl system of Symphogear requires relics and adapters, who are the people who use relics. And using what's basically just the resonance of, you know, like connecting the person to the relic, developing phonic gain by singing, they can, you know, synchronize themselves with the relic, thus getting its power. Generally, it's used to defeat monsters known as Noise, at least at the beginning of the series proper. And Noise are these monsters that are kind of a little, they're all like very, very goofy monsters. And it's no different this season. But when they touch a normal human, they just turn the human into carbon dust. And it's terrifying. So the Symphogear users, they're the only ones who can actually defeat them. So they're very important to society not falling apart. So the first series starts with our main characters are Tsubasa, a solo adapter who had just become solo because she lost her partner, and Hibiki, who is a newly found adapter due to having a relic in her body, literally. The main person they fight against for a while is Chris, who is also another Symphogear user, but later Fine, who is a goddess who keeps reincarnating within people. With the humans, and she's trying to destroy the moon. By the end, Fine is defeated, of course, and Chris becomes good, joining Tsubasa and Hibiki to prevent something called the lunar attack from getting worse, because she's trying to shoot the moon, blow to smithereens, and they were able to help things out to mitigate what happened. Then in Symphogear G, we have a new set of adapters, Maria, Kirika, and Shirabe, who try to awaken a ruin known as Frontier with the help of Nastasia and Dr. John Wayne Wersingatorix. I can never say the full name of that. Anyway, Dr. Ware, that's the important thing. He's this creepy old guy. They are trying to, you know, awaken Frontier in order to deal with the aftermath of the lunar attack from the first season. They have the right idea. They want to do good, but they're doing bad. For, like, whatever. Of course, Hibiki, Tsubasa, and Chris fight against them. They turn good as well. It's all fine. And they eventually end up fighting Dr. Ware and defeating him as well, because he has created the Nephilim, which is a monster that is born from relic. So it's like a living relic, basically. But yeah, so that's the second season. There's also some stuff with Miku, so, Hibiki's best friend, and she also gets turned into a gear user temporarily, but goes back to just being a supporter by the end of that season. So that gets into this season, GX. So, you know, as always, we can see that, like, the girls are going to always be important as heroes for one reason or another. And this season is no different, but this time we are fighting against a group called the Alchemist Cult, who is led by Carol. And there's also another figure who just happens to look very similar to Carol. Like, they both look like the same young girl with just slightly different hair colors and stuff. But this girl, Elf9, who wants to stop the Alchemist Cult. And we have these new villains who are called the Autoscorers, and they can create something called Alkanoise, which is noise but like bumped up, so they can defeat the Symphogear users. I think that's everything to talk about up the top here.
That was pretty impressive, to be honest, because I always have problems. And even the creator, I think, admits this in some interview, but I always have problems trying to explain, even in summary form, what the heck Symphogear is. Much less GX. So.
yeah. I mean, of course I am simplifying things. I mean, these are all like 12, 13 episode seasons. So we have, you know, a lot that happens in a short period of time in each season. So of course I am dropping a lot of stuff. But, you know, that's very, very basically what happens in the first two seasons. That's the important stuff to know. The important players, if you will, before we get into this season. So now we do have more or less six magical girls that are, you know, part of the team. They're all dealing with different stuff. And then, yeah, the new villains are very different because there's these, like, automatons, basically, the Autoscorers. And they're all, unique, and they all represent a different kind of music, I believe. There's a lot going on there. The designs are also very interesting. But yeah.
Pretty much.
Before we get more into the story, I was wondering if you could tell us why you love this series so much, this particular season.
Oh my god. So like I said, I kind of compare this to Sailor Moon S, where the characters kind of feel more complete, to be precise. Like, you see each of them go through kind of like a mini arc, because again, since it's 13 episodes, you know, they really have to condense everything. And so, like, most characters will get like one episode of like a season arc, one might say, in one episode. But it feels like actual progression. Not to say that the other seasons don't have it, but in GX, it feels complete and it feels super relevant to the plot, and it feels like it makes for a nicer picture. Like, harmony, has the series likes to say near the end, you know, it becomes harmonious in a way. Like, for example, Maria. I'm just going to pick Maria because that's my favorite character of all Symphogear. You know, Maria goes from having some faith in herself, but then kind of like realizing who she was when she was with FIS versus who she is now, kind of like struggling to like not necessarily adapt to her new situation, but kind of like adapt to the fact that she doesn't have to be as, I guess, to base it on her own experience, performative strength, and be able to be like herself and not have to worry about being perfect, which is something I really identify with. Just her arc itself is really fantastic, you know. And then, of course, there's Hibiki, Carol, and Tsubasa kind of have a thing going on with their dads, respectively. But Hibiki's arc is kind of like with mainly having to do with her dad and having to confront kind of like a side of herself where she's like clearly still hurt by what he did. And it's kind of like, okay, either you admit it, that you have that inside you and you kind of have to resolve it, or, you know, just kind of like keep pushing it behind, which even Miku, I think, points out as well, if I remember correctly. So yeah, like each character has something that's kind of connects back to like Carol or the autoscores, or even like the idea of like who you are as a person, essentially. And actually, because there was something in the original website, I think, symphogear.blogpost.com translate a lot of stuff from each seasons as they were coming out. Shout out to Zoid9000 on Twitter. He's the guy behind it. And so the tagline for Symphogear GX was like, fixing what is broken. And so for me, it was like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, because that is a lot of like each character. It's like fixing what is quote unquote broken, depending on the concept of what that means. So yeah.
Yeah.
There's something about GX that's just like special to me, which is weird. I keep finding a lot of fans don't like GX. They prefer AXZ, the next season, for the same reasons I'm listing, which is weird because I don't think AXZ does that, but I don't know. I just like GX a lot.
Well, not to put a pun in there, but it just didn't resonate with you the same way as this season did, and that's okay. Yes, so I guess some other things to point out as we start this, talking about this season in more detail, is, you know, the organization that they work for has changed from Section 2 to SONG, or the Squad of Nexus Guardians, which is fun. So there, you know, are going to be new goals with this group and all of that. But of course, we still have Genjudo Kazanari, right? Who's everyone's dad. He's so cool. Dad. The best dad, even in this season of dads.
The real dad. Yeah. Everyone's dad.
Yeah. So, yeah, as you said, you know, there's this kind of running thing we have. With Carol, we clearly see that, like, she experienced this this tragedy with her father being burnt as a heretic, I guess.
Yeah.
And I still am very confused by this, because it's like, when did this happen? Because Carol still looks like a child. But, like, in general, basically everything she is, like, focused on is about that, like, doing everything for her father to, like, kind of avenge his death and all of that, which is, like, a reasonable thing, I guess, but it's, like, unclear of, like, what he really wanted for her to do compared to, like, what she thinks he wanted him to do and all of that.
You know, based on context clues, I assume this has to be kind of, like, the same era as, like, the witch trials, right? During the 1600s. In some non-specific European country. Because during the show, I think it's one of the autoscorers who says it, or itself nine, that says, you know, Carol's been alive for centuries. And so I think this is obviously a headcanon because there is no, like, you know, obviously quote-unquote canon explanation for this. But I think it's kind of like there's certain things that affect you so much in terms of tragedy that you kind of stay stuck in that position. And so I'm probably going to mention it in the spoiler section, but let's just say there's something in the show that indicates that Carol kind of just decided to stay a kid forever because that's when she kind of died, quote unquote. So for her, it's like, well, I didn't really grow up. I just stay like this because my dad died when I was like this. So she doesn't seem to be keen on being an adult, if that makes sense. And even in the show, there's one part, at least my interpretation, of course, where she's kind of like, yeah, whatever, here I am in this form. And it makes sense for, like, other stuff that happens that I'll probably also mention, like, maybe in a spoiler section.
Yeah. Because
they're plot-related reasons.
Yes, yes. She's, like, very interesting because, like, she's clearly a very, very powerful alchemist. Kind of also has, like, witchy vibes, which makes sense. It definitely feels like maybe she didn't physically grow at all because of that, at least at this point in the series. I guess because she can, like, do alchemy and stuff, she's able to literally transfer herself to various bodies, and I think that's why Elf Nine also looks exactly like her.
So
that, I guess, makes sense. It's getting into, like, you know, expanding the possibilities of the world of Symphogear, which is interesting. And I do think that, you know, when it comes to, like, sequels, it kind of makes sense that, like, G didn't go as far as this season did. Just, like, they are, of course, trying to expand on things and all of that, but it is different, for sure. We're, like, getting more lore, more possibilities of what is, you know, out there and all of that. But yeah, so we see that we have, you know, Elf Nine, who is working with Song, and she brings them this this idea of this project which could help them to defeat these new Alkanoids, and it's called Project Ignite. And it seems to be a little bit more dangerous. So one thing I really appreciate is, like, you know, this series understands the importance of transformation sequences in a magical girl series, right? So they do really space out, even though the characters often are all transformed during, like, each of these fights, they really space it out so that we only get a few sequences per episode, if at all. So I'm always like, oh, who are we going to see transform today? Like, actually going through the sequence. And they are interesting. They're all, as always, they're updating. And we'll talk more about, like, the bad parts of the transformation. But in general, you know, still, it's a good time, I guess, generally, to watch. You know, like, there's clearly a lot of care put into the transformation sequence. But
if there's one thing that Symphogear does right in every season is the transformation sequences. You can see the staff level up each season until it becomes a thing where you're like, okay, now you're actually doing alchemy here. Hold on a second. Because some of it seems impossible to animate, and yet you did it. Good job. But with GX, what's really interesting is that not only do we get, like, the main transformation, we also get the Ignite transformation.
Yes.
Which, at simplified form, is basically just like a recolor of the outfits, but they do it in a way where it's like, oh, okay, it's showing the effect, right? The transformation is actually more of taking on more power that the Ignite module does. So
yeah, it is pretty cool. I do also appreciate that the way they transform is different for each character as well. So, for example, one thing I noticed is because, you know, Chris's transformation generally, you know, like, her form always has some ribbons on it. So they went full out with the ribbons in this transformation sequence, which in a way that reminded me a lot of Sailor Moon, which I thought was nice. So that was cool. Yeah.
Yeah, and Kirika's is always switch team, which I always love, because at one point during her transformation, never fails, there's always a witch scream. Like a...
Yes.
Chef's kiss right there for the theming of each transformation.
Yes, yes. She's like the most Halloween magical girl
I've ever seen.
somehow. So like the characters, you know, they're very interesting. Do you want to talk about the Alchemist cult a little bit, the auto scorers?
Sure. So the auto scorers, first of all, are some of the best characters. The villains in Sinfigure are kind of like fun in a way where you're like, sometimes you just want to see them die, like Dr. Ver. And even then, you're like, you know, Dr. Ver was fun for one season only. But even then, it's like, you can still have fun with the villains. And the auto scorers are some of the most memorable in terms of design, at least for me. Because not only are they color-coded, but they kind of have, like, personality quirks. You know, Gary, the blue one, is clearly, like, kind of meant to be kind of the most outgoing one. But, oh my god, what's the adjective? She's kind of like, I don't know, I guess the term that comes to mind, even though I don't think it's the one I want, is kind of like rich girl, oh ho 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 ho, kind of trope, but like, I guess, filtered through automatons. You know, she doesn't do the Ojo laugh, but she's clearly kind of like calling back to that. And then, you know, Mika is kind of like the little ganky one, the little energetic girly automaton, but she's also the strongest. Mika is the red one, by the way. Farah is the green one. The one with the sword. The very ladylike one. Who's also kind of like twisted in a way. She makes the best phases in all the show. And obviously because she has a sword, most of the time she just kind of fights with Tsubasa. And then there's Layer, who is the yellow one. Layer is kind of like the least one we know. We kind of have an idea about. She kind of seems to be like the more serious of the four.
Yeah, yeah.
She and Farah are kind of like the more serious, but Layer is kind of like the more serious one. And the only thing that we know about Layer is that she would be really good at arcade games, considering the amount of coins she has, and that she has a little sister who's basically a giant mecha, a giant mummy mecha, whose name we really never know, and who basically we don't know anything about except that she's supposed to be very, very scary.
And she is, yeah.
And of course, because it's alchemy, each of them are actually based on a element of alchemy, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
And Carol, I suspect Carol might be what they would call Aether, Aether. Which is basically also known as quintessence, the ability to be able to do lots of really neat things like traveling through dimensions, which we've seen Carol do. But yeah, the auto scorers, they're a pretty interesting bunch. And there's something said in the show, which is basically that the auto scorers are meant to be kind of like parts of Carol's personality embedded as AI. In those automatons. First of all, I don't think that's nothing new. I think we've seen that in other shows, but it's really interesting when you think about, because you see Carol not really emoting a lot, at least in a good chunk of the show, but when you see the auto scores, you're like, oh, this is the way you kind of like get your emotions, your human emotions out, you know? It's like, okay, well, Mika might be the child one. Gairi might be kind of like, you know, the arrogant one. Farah is probably the twisted part of you. Layer is probably the one that's just the part of you that's just like, leave me alone. Right? I don't know. These are just interpretations. But what's really funny is that there's like extras for Sinfogear GX. And then they're supposed to be like funny extras. And so in one of the extras, Carol points out, why are you guys posing like that? You look stupid. Stop it. And Gary basically says, like, you know, you did make us and we're supposed to have your personality. So I think you just want to make these poses. So even in the shorts, they're like pointing out like stuff that clearly Carol put into that she clearly didn't want anyone else to know. But yeah, no. Gosh, I don't know what else to say about the auto scores. But yeah, that's basically...
There are like a lot of thematic things going on with the auto scores, especially because they each have an element. They each have a dance style. They each have a tarot deck suit. And then they each have an archangel that they're named after, which is interesting. Layer is, she's named after the angel Uriel. And the reason for all the gold in her stuff is because her suit in the tarot deck is coins or the pentagram. So it's, you know, that's like the money suit. Her element is also is earth. And then her dance style is that breakdance. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
For Mika, she's the only one whose dance style is not actually a dance style. She's influenced by Kyari Pamyu Pamyu, which is like, once you say that, it makes so much sense because she's named after the angel Michael, which is like, okay. But that influence makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, obviously fire and wands. And, you know, the elements and the cup, as someone who knows a little bit about tarot, that makes a lot of sense. Those are very connected as well in those. In tarot. And then Gary, she's named after Gabriel. She is obviously water, which also can lead to ice. And her tarot deck is cups. Her dance style is ballet. And then Farah is named after Raphael. Her dance style is flamenco, and her element is wind. And then her tarot deck is swords. So that's why she has all the swords.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, that's pretty cool. You know, now that you mentioned the angels, like, oh, that probably makes a little bit of sense now considering her name, their names.
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. They all have surnames. I think if they're not all, some of them seem to come from Arabic. But yeah, I don't know Arabic, so I'm not.
I remember something about that because obviously in the credits, right, they have first and last names. But in the show, they only mention the first names. And I only realized they had last names when playing the mobile game. Because the mobile game had a global server that only lasted 5 months. Literally, the minute it started, like 5 months later, they were like, yeah, we're out. And it's like, oh, okay, never mind. And so obviously they translated the names for the English version. And they were showing the surnames. I was like, you guys have surnames? And yeah, I do remember them appearing to be of Arabic influence. I was like, oh, that's pretty neat.
Yeah, yeah. So that's interesting. It's not like important to the story, but it's interesting to point out, you know, the kind of influence and stuff there. Like, I love a theme, you know, when it comes to like a set of anyone. Like, so you gotta shout it out when it happens. But yes, so as we get the girls, like, kind of each like exploring Project Ignite, it's actually by episode 6 that they start to try using the Project Ignite power because it's like, it's constantly being mentioned, like, this is dangerous stuff. It takes a while just to get them to agree to the plan in the first place. But once they do, it's like, okay, clearly this is the only thing that we can do. It requires a great amount of self-reflection and stuff in order for them to, like, you know, just be able to channel that much, I guess, synchronicity.
The thing is about the Ignite module is that, you know, it's based on like the berserk form of Symphogear, and we already saw that with Symphogear G. I think it's G or the first one. It's been a while.
Basically,
at some point in the previous, in one of the previous two seasons, Hibiki goes berserk, which is, you know, her form, she kind of looks like basically like a possessed spirit, right, with fangs and everything. And so the Ignite module is basically what happens if you can control the berserk form of your Symphogear? So that's why they're all like, oh, wait, but this is what Hibiki went through.
Yeah, for sure. So it is interesting because there is that like kind of dangerous element of it. I mean, the berserk form was super cool, even though, of course, it was like dangerous for Hibiki to go through and it was like a whole thing. Like it looked very cool. So
indeed, the rule of cool.
Very important aspect. So I want to move on to the second half of the season after episode 6. So I want to put in our spoiler point here, because despite the fact that we're only halfway through the series, so much happens. And I just wanted to, you know, let people know if they want to stop here and go watch the show and then come back, that's fine. But now we're going to start talking about all the end of series spoilery stuff.
Oh boy, and is there a lot of it?
There is, yes. So the first people to do the Ignite module is Tsubasa and Chris. It takes a lot for them to be able to do it previously. It's tough, but they manage and they don't lose control, and it works really well. And then, this is also the end of episode 6 is when Carol burns herself alive, which is like, whoa, what the heck is happening?
Yeah, I remember when I watched that, I went, wait, what? What happened? I'm sorry?
Yeah, huh? I was like, oh, okay, sure. And then it was like, okay, so that means that, like, now the autoscores have no master to follow, and Elf9 is still there. What does that mean? It's like a lot like, what happens when you let people loose? And it's like very clear, like the autoscores are like very extreme personalities. So they mm-hmm. all are kind of a little like, okay, they're all meant to be like some sort of like just completely uncontrollable for one reason or another sort of thing. Gary shows up in episode 7 to fight Maria, Shirabe, and Kiriga. So there, Maria tries to use the Ignite module and ends up going berserk because, I don't know, she still has a lot of things, a lot of self-reflection. This is like the, if you want to control the beast, you need therapy kind of thing is what's going on this season. Yeah. But yes, by the end of episode 7, Maria is able to figure out finding strength in her own weakness, especially in terms of like reflecting the advice she got from Elfman earlier in the show. You know, Elfman is a very interesting, very cute character. She's very wholesome. But yeah, so Maria is able to figure out that she needs to like accept her quote-unquote weakness. I don't think she has any particular weakness, but that's what she feels like as a weakness in any case. And that's able to help her to use the Ignite module properly and is able to defeat Gary. And then at the very end of that episode, Hibiki and Miku run into a very surprising character, Hibiki's father. So we get more dad stuff. The next episode, Hibiki is trying to catch up with her dad, you know, try to like reason with him and all of that. But it doesn't quite work out. He's not necessarily a good guy. In fact, I still think he's not a good guy by the end of the show, but the show is trying to tell you differently. He's kind of almost a stereotype of a bad dad, I feel like. I don't know. But yes.
Hibiki's dad is interesting and, at least for me, a little tougher to swallow the older I get. Not necessarily because of bad writing or something like that. Mm-hmm. I actually think he was written pretty well, which is the thing. It got a little bit too real.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was just an absent father, and you know, there are absent fathers out there. It was a lot suddenly, I guess. And Hibiki's, of course, very frustrated about that. And, you know, she's not able to really kind of overcome those emotions
when coming up against Mika
and fighting her alongside Shirabe and Kiriga. Though this episode ends up being also a lot about those two because they are constantly trying to protect each other. They are, you know, besties. They've been through a lot together. And they were able to finally kind of overcome their differences because they were just basically fighting because they love each other.
Yeah.
Is their friendship. But yeah, and they're able to use their Ignite modules in this episode, and that was really cool. They do a lot of like comedy moves. Like they love their combos for sure.
It's
really fun to watch this kind of action.
that kind of becomes like solidified tradition from here on out that at some point they will have a combo action, and their song will also be a combination of both their individual songs. I'm sure you've noticed that Kirika's song and Shirabe's song individually, right? And then when they combine, the lyrics of their respective songs combine as well. And the chorus, whenever you listen or I guess read the chorus if you don't know Japanese.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
You're just like, oh my god, they're uniting the emotions as well. So it's whenever they do their dual attacks together, it's just like, oh, it's beautiful. Yes, we love to see two precious children together. I love them so much.
Yeah, it's great. They're fun. For sure. Yes. So it's also at the end of this episode that we see Carol wake up. It turns out, oh, she just had a spare body. It's fine. She didn't really die. It's cool. And we also see that she's able to use Elf9's eyes to see what's happening over at Song. So that's a little, you know, they're very good with their cliffhangers in this series in general. There's a lot of that.
The thing that actually struck me, because the thing about Symphogear, if you're someone who kind of like likes to rewatch it once in a while, like I do, how you put it, the first time you're just in for the ride, you're just enjoying it, stuff like that. The second time you kind of like, okay, let me try to take in a little bit more now, obviously, because I already know what's happened, so I can like pay attention to other details. And what's so interesting to me about Carol, and this is the part I wanted to bring up, because I believe it's mentioned elsewhere, but this is also the part where, besides bringing up that she's been doing this for centuries, they also bring up that not only is this Carol's last spare body, which means she, I don't know how many she created, but she must have created a ton with alchemy, but this is also kind of the moment where you realize that in the first episode, they say that alchemy is a hyper-advanced technology that existed before science and magic merged. But then in this episode, the way Carol talks about, like, you know, basically downloading her memories, installing her memories, right? High-speed installation of her memories, right? And stuff like that. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, this is very, like, electronic almost. It's not because, you know, with alchemy, you expect, like, medieval-ish type of language or concept. And it's like, no, this is alchemy that's been upgraded. So they use, like, upgraded language as well. So I thought that was interesting. It's like, oh, this is alchemy, but it's clearly like more high tech, I guess, right? Well, it's also interesting is how she says that the body is rejecting, the last spare body she has is rejecting kind of like being in that body because she basically killed herself last time. So it's like, oh, that's an interesting reaction. I mean, because it's like, I don't think either she realizes or is in denial, but like, when somebody kills themselves, you know, that does tend to have like some effect on you if you come back to life, right? So, and I guess hearkening back to like the fact that the auto scores are all kind of like based on angels, right? Like the story of Lazarus, man who came back from being sick, and then of course Jesus, right? The resurrection. It's like, you know, Carol, you might want to consider why your body is kind of like having an issue with the fact that you died. So I don't know. I thought that was all like interesting details that I think you only catch if you're like rewatching it for a second time, which I think is pretty fun when that happens.
Yeah. So another thing that happens a lot, I guess, especially now that we have six good magical girls, is like there's a lot of like groups of three happening or groups of two. You know, when Tsubasa goes to meet with her father, it's very different because she's with just Maria. And to be honest, yeah, Tsubasa and Maria spend a lot of time together because they're both still idols also. Forgot to mention, because that does happen in the very first episode, is they have a concert. You've got to always start with one.
Yeah, and they're also kind of like the oldest. I believe Maria is early 20s. I'm not sure if she's 21 or 22.
Yeah.
But definitely early 20s, if I remember correctly. And Tsubasa just obviously graduated high school. So at best, she's like 18 or 19.
Right.
So they're the oldest years as well. It's also interesting that, you know, the two oldest are also paired together. And they're also kind of like the ones who kind of worry the most for the other girls.
Yeah, they definitely have like a big sister thing going on in terms of their relationship to the others. Prefer everything. So I think they definitely have a lot of pressure there. As far as like among the girls who are still in school, Chris is the oldest, and so she still feels like this great kind of pressure, especially with Shirabe and Kirika, because she's also a reformed gear versus you know, Shirabe and Kirika. So it's like this kind of weird progression of stuff. It's an interesting relationship.
Yeah, I really like that they wrote in Chris being so worried about being a role model and trying to be a good role model for Kirika and Shirabe. And it's just like, oh, we love to see growth, right? Because Chris, you didn't expect Chris to be the one who to be worried about that sort of thing. But it also makes sense when you think about what she's been through. She's like, no, somebody saved me, so I should be also paying that forward. And it's like, oh, this warms the heart.
It's nice, yeah. So as we get to the end of the series, we have this giant palace. It's Carol's palace, right? But it's like something that comes up a lot and then is kind of like the final showdown is like there. But not before we get a returning character, Dr. Ware. I kind of thought he had died or was like in jail, but
that's the thing. I also thought he was dead for some reason. I don't know why. And from what I can tell, I think most people felt that way when they saw him again in GX. It's like, wait, didn't you die? So
right.
Imagine that character, you know. He was like, am I going to be remembered forever? Well, based on viewership, I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, clearly he is sort of a memorable character in the sense it's like, oh God, you're so insane. Just get off the screen. You're fun and you're also annoying.
Yeah,
he is a terrible villain, of course, but like that's the point of being a villain. But
yeah,
anyway. Yeah, so it turns out that Dr. Ware has been working behind the scenes with
Carol, kind of.
With that. Oh, we didn't get to the other important thing. So as Carol can see through Elf 9, it's become clear that she was actually using Elf 9 this whole time, and the Ignite project was Carol's project, which is like, whoa, that's very big-brained.
Mm-hmm.
And Elf 9 didn't even know she was a mole for her. So that's like, there's a whole lot of stuff going on there.
Yeah, that's the other part I wanted to mention, because I said earlier, you know, there's something about Carol that's kind of like maybe insinuated later on. This is the part where obviously it's found out that Elf 9 is the mole, not by choice, obviously. Obviously, at some point they mentioned the role of the autoscorers was basically to copy the songs that the girls would sing in Berserk form and stuff like that. And at some point, Carol says, we are both homunculi made from the same original. I was kind of dancing around that earlier, but that's kind of the final point I wanted to make is that with regards to Carol's appearance, I think she did manage to grow old, right? She did manage to get to presumably a very, very old age. But I think when she decided to be like, well, I don't really want to die because, you know, revenge, I need to live to be able to enact revenge. I think she made the form be, you know, basically children because of the trauma. You know, for her, it's like, well, this is the moment when I basically stopped living. So that's why I will now regress to a child, but in homunculi form, essentially. I don't know. That's how I interpret it, obviously. Some other people might have different interpretations. But that, at least for me, in a rewatch, I noticed that. I was like, that makes sense now.
Sure.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fair assumption. It's like, you know, that there might have been an older Carol at some point, but, you know, when making her new body. I mean, it's basically like, this is just a cloning story, essentially, but like using ancient language. So, you know, it would make sense that her, like, clones, so to speak, are little girls, you know, so that she can grow older and all of that. But yeah, so by this point, you know, we have seen everyone's Ignite modules, and then we learn that, like, oh, actually, these are bad. We can't use them. Oh no, what are we gonna do? And then, is it episode 11 that the sky breaks open? I cannot remember.
Let me see. I believe episode 11 actually opens with basically Leia's little sister being shown in the most anticlimactic way possible. Yeah, I think that's when. Either that one or 12 that begins, like, breaking the sky. I don't even remember. Because 11 and 12 kind of blur together because it continues.
It is 11.
Okay.
Because I'm checking my notes over on Discord. Very helpful that I made all these notes. I wrote, sky broke in 11.
Okay. Yeah, see, for me, apparently, in episode 11, the most important part in the opening sequence was Leia's little sister being anticlimactic.
I do think it is Leia herself. I don't know if it's actually a younger sister form. I do think it is literally her being giant. But it was like, oh, crap, there's a giant android. What are we going to do? And then it was like right away cleaned up. No problem. We're good. Which happens a lot in Synfigure, I feel like.
Yeah, no.
They're just like, so, you know, we're on to the next thing, you know.
Yeah, Synfigure kind of suffers a little bit from that. Oh, well, we have this dangling plot point. Here you go. Solution. Done. But yeah.
But yeah, so, you know, the auto scores have been collecting these cursed melodies, and using that and the power of Dr. Ware, we have the sky breaking apart. I was like, oh, the sky is broken?
Is this a thing that can happen? Okay, then. And then, yeah, Carol's home,
her chateau, is now in the sky and is like this big source for a lot of power. She has a relic as well. She uses something called burst mode. She transforms much like any of the other gear users do, but when she does, she ages up
very quickly in a
weird way, which we'll talk about later. And so then, you know, of course, the end of everything is like this final battle with Carol and trying to, you know, as always, try to connect with Carol in terms of like trying to remember what her father would have wanted and stuff like that. So, it's a very fun, again, you know, great action just in general for the whole show. So this is no different, this, you know, final battle and all that. And, you know, then Elf9 is trying to talk to Carol as well, saying that what their father really wanted was to bring harmony to the world and forgive everyone for what happened. But Carol refuses to believe this. And so she decides to burn away her memories to get her revenge. And so, you know, even though they're bad, they end up using the Ignite modules and finally are able to unleash an even more powerful form. And this is really interesting because there's like a rainbow tornado
that everyone flies up in, and then when they come out, of course,
at the end of every season, we have to have a new form. So they are able to even utilize Carol's own font again to create this like advanced form of the Ignite module. And you know it's more advanced because the Ignite module, it's like their clothes, but it's using a lot of black
as well,
like with their main colors. And then now it's like, you know, expanded and it's more light colors and everything. It's a lot of light versus dark, very obvious stuff, but
yeah.
Even now, being a Synfigure fan for many years, it's still really hard for me to tell which outfit is from which season. Because obviously, just like any other magical girls, right? The Synfigure gears get updated and get different designs. But there's something interesting. I don't remember if it's GX and AXZ. The designs don't really change much to the point where you're like, did you change or did you not? And so it's always confusing. Either way, between all the seasons, because you're like the X Drive, for example, right? The form of the X Drive. You're like, okay, I think you're from this season, right? It's way easier to tell for the X Drives what season they are because they're just that cool. You know, they have additional accessories, which helps, right? And each accessory is relevant to the Synfigure. In question, like Tsubasa is always like very traditional Japanese robes flying around, a phoenix wing at some point, maybe, right?
Yeah, definitely. So with that, you know, getting to the very final part of the battle, Carol has one more thing up her sleeve, a giant metal monster. That was really fun. but they are able to defeat it, you know, using the power of friendship and their gears. They're able to defeat it, and it's like about to explode. And Hibiki reaches out to Carol one more time, and you know she's able to remember what her father really wanted and all of that, which is nice. So with the evil defeated, we see that like Carol has become good. So yeah, so Elf9 is you know recovering because she had like
gotten shot midway through the show, like just before the big battle, and she's just like
slowly maybe dying, but like is still around to comment on stuff and try to talk to people, and it's interesting. But yeah, so she's recovering, and you know, like everyone is still happy to accept her. They're like, you know, you didn't know that you were a mole, it's fine, so you know, we still trust you and we're gonna be friends, and it's gonna be great when you feel better. And Carol appears to, and they kind of talk through some things, and then they decide to, yes, merge their bodies together. And so now it looks like she's still Carol, but she clearly also has all of Elf-9's memories, so, like, they are now one and the same. And then finally we see at the very end that, like, Hibiki decides to bring her parents together and help them reunite, and that was interesting. Yes. Okay, so with all of that out of the way, we do have to talk about some problematic stuff with the show. With all of Symphogear, this series is no different. We do have the returning problem of the sexy characters. So, like, that is just something inherent in the art style and the way that they animate, etc. It's something that is par for the course for them. So it's not, like, shocking or anything by this point. If you have watched the previous seasons, it's the same. The only thing is, in particular, worrisome is with Carol and Elf-9. So when we first see Elf-9 in the very beginning of the series, she's wearing, like, a kind of, you know, mage cape, but she's also in her underwear for some reason. I still don't understand why this happened, but she is, yeah, so it's like you can just see her underwear, and it was a very weird choice. But meanwhile, Carol is not that uncovered, you know, in her base form. So it's a weird decision to make. I mean, she does have her legs exposed, but she's not in her underwear, right?
So yeah, no, like she's kind of wearing like a little witch outfit, right? Even when she takes off her robes, it's still kind of like a little, like, appropriate, right? Witch appropriate. For me, G was kind of like the worst in terms of, like, did we need this scene? Or not. I think we could have done it without this scene, or at least maybe some other way to do it. For me, G was the worst. I'm sorry. GX is like nothing in comparison to some of the scenes in GX. I'm just thinking of, like, the shower scene.
That was weird, yes. But, like, so in near the beginning of this season, it also kind of does some similar stuff where when the Alkanoids, like, destroy the Symphogear part of, like, the people, like, the girls are just rendered completely naked, and it's like, why is this happening? Why can't you get some clothes on? Like, what? It's like this unnecessary thing that happens. And of course it happened in previous seasons as well, but it's there. And of course in the transformation sequence themselves, there's a lot of ogling of their bodies, which is, you know, again, uncomfortable when the characters are underage. You know, like, if we're gonna do a series, like, if it's a magical girl show that's, like, all sexy and they're all adults, I mean, go off, it's fine, if that's what they want, you know, that's, like, a thing about those characters. But when it's kids, it's always weird. Then the other thing, of course, is with Carol's transformation sequence, because, again, she looks like a child, and then when she transforms, she becomes, like, a full adult and wears very little. And in her transformation sequence, they really accentuate the fact that her body is growing.
Okay, yeah. So first of all, like I said earlier, I rewatched the Symphogear seasons. And for me, Carol's transformation, I don't know if it's because I've seen Cyber Team in Akihabara, where to me, that's the worst offender of, like, accentuating certain things that should be accentuated in the transformation. Like, for me, Carol's just like, oh, okay, yeah, she's clearly growing. That's why they're showing her body, like, transforming. Cyber Team in Akihabara is just like, the shots are clearly meant to not necessarily be for transformation's sake, let's just say. I mean, the transformation is pretty, but it's like even as a kid when I watched it, I watched Cyber Team in Akihabara, I was still like, this makes me feel something, and it's not positive. Right, but with Carol, ironically enough, I don't know, if maybe I would have felt different if I watched this as a kid, but right now as an adult, I was like, yeah, this is a neat transformation. Like, obviously I see the problems, but for me it's like, eh. And actually, the thing I wanted to mention is that the first time Carol transforms, you know, before she transforms, Tsubasa tells her, you know, basically, you know, I'm not going to fight a kid, right? I'm not going to fight a shorty like you. And so I think that's why Carol transforms. Because you kind of notice Carol doesn't need to transform because she's that powerful. But in that moment, the first time she transforms, she's like, oh, yeah, you want to fight an adult? Okay, here I go. And I think that's why we kind of get the shot of her kind of like caressing her bosom, right? And being like, is this more appropriate for you now? Obviously, the problem with Sinfigure writers is that when they write really good scenes, they write really good scenes. But then you get the other part, which is like, when they write questionable things, you're like, oh boy, Sinfigure writers, what are you faking? You know? But yeah, I don't know. When I rewatched that scene, I was like, oh, I don't think Carol even cares that she's an adult. She's just like, yes, this is my form. Do you care now? Right? But yeah, obviously, that's, again, I have to reiterate, that's my interpretation. That doesn't mean that anything else is not invalid by any means. Because yeah, I don't know. My first thought was like, oh,
right.
a transformation from kid to adult. We haven't had that in a while in Magical Girls. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. That was my first thought.
Yeah, it's rare. It happens, but it is rare. Let's see. And the last time it happened in Precure at that point, because it was like 2015, is Doki Doki Precure. We did have a child turning into an adult in that season. Obviously, when it happens in Precure, it is not ogling or anything like that, because that is a show for children. Obviously, there are definitely ways to do this sort of thing without it being weird, but because it's Sinfigure, they did make it weird.
Man, and I am going to warn everybody. The good thing about it is that you'll find a lot more fans in Sinfigure. At least in my experience, obviously, maybe I've been lucky. I found a lot more fans who really don't like this part of Sinfigure.
Oh, for sure.
Especially more so when it comes to the merch. If you think it's bad in the series, the merch has been increasingly getting questionable with a capital Q. You're just like, what are you guys doing now? And it's with every character. So it's like, oh, this is bad for some of them.
Yep.
So I'll just leave it at that. I'm not saying that to kind of like be like trying to turn away from the point. I'm just sort of like, I guess kind of like a warning. It's like, listen, if you get into Sinfigure, be careful with the merch. There's a lot of great merch out there. There's some of it that's gonna make you want to cry. Let's just say that.
Yeah. You know, it's like, again, it's a part of this particular series. There are series that are for an older target audience that don't get weird about it. It's just Sinfigure in particular has made this mark in this way. It's kind of unfortunate because, I mean, yeah, it's just like, it's par for the course for them. And it's just something that you have to always keep in mind going into the series.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You know, and I, again, like you said, I think pretty much everyone I know who likes Sinfigure is like, yeah, but the weird thing is that it's like, well, we all, as long as we acknowledge it, and accept that that is
an unfortunate part of the franchise. Exactly. It's cool, and that's generally how I feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah, and to be fair, again, at least for me, my experience, I always put it like this. It could always be worse.
I mean, I guess.
Listen, I'm kind of trying to avoid spoilers for the next two seasons, because the next two seasons, not necessarily with the sexualization, but there are going to be some parts where you're like, you did need to do that, but thank you, I guess. Just say that Sinfigure, this is probably why it's really hard to recommend Sinfigure in general, because it's like, I don't want to compare it to Utena, because they're two different beasts, right? But I guess it is kind of like Utena in the sense that, you know, Utena is really good, or that at the very least you'll have a fun time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also really hard to recommend, because it just basically comes with like a page of like, well,
yeah,
this is also what you have to look out for.
Definitely. It requires warnings, and that's fine. You know, I think there's a lot of media like that. Like, hey, I think you'll like this series, but keep in mind that this happens. Like, that's pretty normal. That's fine that is something you have to deal with when recommending a series. I mean, I certainly still had a good time regardless of those issues, so that's like kind of the important thing. That's why, like, we're talking about this series versus, like, for example, like, there are definitely series where I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to talk about this show on the podcast because, or movie or what have you, because it is, oh, it's too much, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oof.
But yeah, I think that's everything I wanted to bring up. So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about regarding Sinfigure GX?
Let me check. Hold on. Because probably the only things I want to bring up are kind of like supplemental material, as the kids would say, to Symfigure itself, is that even the staff and Nana Mizuki were kind of like, man, this series sure took a toll on us. Because Nana Mizuki, if you don't know, basically, besides being the voice of Tsubasa in all five seasons, she also writes the opening songs and sings them as well. It's kind of part of the marketing behind Symfigure that there's Nana Mizuki and there's a bunch of like super famous people who either sing really, really well or are idols. That's kind of like the marketing behind Symfigure. Like if there's something Symfigure, Nana Mizuki always has to be there. And also the voice actress for Chris, she also always sings the ending themes to every symphony or season. The reason why I mention a lot more Nana Mizuki though is because for GX, surprisingly, she had trouble writing the song, opening song Exterminate, which is the best song in all of the seasons. Sorry, everyone. It's the best one. For apparently for Vitalization, which I believe is the opening for G, right? Because the first one is Synchro Gazer. She was like, oh, I wrote this in like 7 days after I read the synopsis, right? But for... No, wait. She wrote it in 2 days. Sorry. 7 days was for Exterminate, for the opening for GX. Because she apparently, when Kaneko, one of the creators of Symfigure, gave her the synopsis, kind of like, here's the story, read it, you know, make the song. She was just like, oh God, this is intense. You know, and I can't blame her. I mean, GX does get pretty intense, which is also kind of why it's my favorite season. You know, but then she mentions that like the director and everybody in the staff kind of also had a bad time making it because apparently a bunch of them got sick either during or after the show. The show production. So it's like, oh, Jesus, what happened for this season?
Wow.
Yeah, and... that's pretty much what I wanted to mention from her, because the only other thing I have is that the director actually mentioned something interesting when it comes to Carol, in that, you know, obviously, as we've said before, she, besides being an alchemist, she's kind of had like a witchy theme to her, right? And for those of you who might be new to the genre, right, the genre kind of started with basically kind of like more witchy type of magical girls. And so he was like, fighting magical girls are pretty common nowadays, but with Carol, they kind of wanted to do something different with her. Basically, make her be more similar to the magical girls that are, hopefully I'm paraphrasing him right, that he grew up with seeing, which are kind of like more like flying types and general like not fighting girls. And so he describes Carol as basically a Showa era magical girl. Which to me, it's like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense if you're familiar with both of those ideas. Then it kind of tracks because, like, those magical girls, they usually were younger and they, you know, they caused a lot of trouble, if you will. But they often would age up for one reason or another. Of course, the idol magical girls were especially the case for that, you know, in the 80s. But... like, it kind of makes sense. Yeah. And to have this kind of, like, this magical girl from the past
that comes out. That that tracks for me. That
makes a lot of sense. But, yeah. So, we have been chatting for quite a while. So, I want to wind things down. So, we are down to the final question, which is, what do you hope to see in the future of the magical girl genre?
Oh, man. You know, I was thinking that... when I was rewatching Symfigure, and after I read that interview with the director where he mentions the detail about Carol being a Showa era magical girl, and I was kind of thinking it would be nice to have like more colorful characters in the same vein as, like, I guess I mentioned her earlier, like Hime-chan's Ribbon, or even like, I guess, like quote unquote traditional magical girls that kind of like, you know, they just have magic. They're not necessarily fighting. They're just kind of like resolving issues day-to-day life. But what I mean more colorful, I don't necessarily mean like, obviously Precure is pretty colorful, right? But it feels like any other magical girl show that is not Precure, and that necessarily is not as fighting intense as Precure. Right. They feel more like still trying to court the accidental side audience that Madoka Magica got, which is kind of like, I guess, for lack of better wording, the edgier side of magical girls. I kind of see like more, not necessarily genuine, but kind of like that sort of sub-genre is running its course. But I don't know. I kind of want to see more kind of like, not necessarily traditional, but kind of like taking that format, kind of like being like, well, how would we do it nowadays, right? In the year 2020, how can we take that formula and do it for a 2022 audience? At the same time, I was also thinking about this earlier because of Symphogear, because Symphogear is also not just magical girls. Technically, it's also, you know, it kind of crosses other genres. People make the joke that it crosses over with mecha, for example, because there's a lot of like aspects that are kind of like found in mecha anime, and then of course fighting anime, right? One of the influences, I don't know if it's for the fifth season or for the show in general, but one of the influences is supposedly Saint Seiya for Symphogear, and it's like, well, you know what, that makes a lot of sense. So I guess for me it would be nice to see more shows that basically just cross genres, where it had like a little bit from everything. And I kind of say that because I'm biased towards those shows a lot. I like it when shows are like, you know, maybe mainly one genre, but they also have like a ton of other stuff that kind of makes it a little bit more exciting. So I don't know. I'm kind of wanting to see more of that because there's a lot of magical girl shows that are coming out nowadays that I see and I'm like, this doesn't seem that interesting to me. Right. And obviously it's me. Right. I don't mean everybody has to follow what I like, but that's why I was like excited for Wonder Egg Priority, because it's like, oh, this seems, you know, different. Right. Yeah. And it seemed like it could have done something had it not unfortunately ended the way it did. I like the ending, but, you know, unfortunately, I am in the minority. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of what I want to see. I don't know if that's a good answer, but that's mine.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Thank you for your answer. I do think that it does get interesting when we do like see more kind of genre crossover, and I do think we're seeing more of that in the recent years and stuff. But yeah, it would be cool to see more of like that old style magical girl come back. I've heard that a few times now from other guests. So yeah, great. So Nan, thank you so much for coming back on to Sparkle Side Chats. Where can people find you and follow you online to talk about Symphogear and other magical girls?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Second of all, you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, generally any other place that's like, I don't know, relevant nowadays. You can usually find me under Jadine Rhein. That's Jadine Rhein, because unfortunately Nan turns out to be a much more popular username than I thought when it comes to registering my pen name. Oops. Other than that, you can also find me trying to manage the Aradia account at Aradia Collect on Twitter. Other places are kind of like on a hiatus because Twitter is mostly where we're able to still manage. Other than that, you can always come to my webcomic, Legendary Beings Eren Celai. That's at ac.jadinerhainstudios.com. It's still eternally on hiatus while I still work eternally on Chapter 4. It's been a couple of years. That's all I say. I'm trying.
That's okay. You're a very busy person.
Yeah, and then you can just read my comic. Come hang out in my Discord. Why not? Or just hang out in the comments. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Great. So yes, thank you again for coming on, and I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Sparkle Side Chats with Magical Girl Ayu. Please subscribe, rate, and review if you like it, and don't forget to tell your friends about the show if you think they'd be interested. If you use social media, don't forget to use the hashtag SparkleSideChats when talking about and sharing the podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at MagicalGirlAyu, spelled A-Y-U,
And you can find me at Ayu She Knows, AYUSHEKNOWS. You can also email us at sparklesidechats@gmail.com. Let us know if there's a topic you want covered or a fan or creator you want to hear from by filling out the form in the show notes. You could also join the Discord for this podcast to talk about magical girls 24/7, often chatting directly with me and both previous and upcoming guests of the podcast. Look for the link in the show notes. Show notes can be found on your platform of choice or at anchor.fm/sparkleside. If you can support the podcast financially, you can buy me a coffee at ko-fi.com/ayushinos. You can also commission me for art there or buy a print on my imprint page. With a Ko-fi monthly membership, you can get bonus content, announcements about episode topics, a Discord role, and your name read aloud on the podcast monthly. Another way to support us one time is by buying something off the Amazon Japan wishlist. This helps with getting more access to magical girl content that we can discuss in future episodes. Feel free to purchase from the used section, as we are not picky here. Original podcast music is by Hazel. You can find her on Twitter at A Few Bruises. Thanks again for listening, and remember, you are magical.